Have you ever heard the legend of Gracie Manor? Perhaps that's a trick question. After all, there are two. Three, actually, if you want to split hairs, but that may be getting a bit too reductive. It's a legend that spans across centuries and takes us to all four corners of America and even beyond. It's a tale of enterprise, struggle, crime, and above all, mystery. Who am I? My name is Jason Holloway. My grandfather raised me on stories from his days as the caretaker of the Gracie Estate here in New Orleans. Those tales fostered in me a deep fascination with the history surrounding the house and the family that once, many years ago, called it home. After nearly 30 years of research, I'm still left with so many questions. Questions that keep me up at night, that keep me tossing in bed, that haunt me. Perhaps it would be best to tell you the story, the whole story, as I've found it over the many years. While there are tales enough to fill volumes of books on the history of the Gracie family, for which over 100 years held a tight grip upon the American East Coast and its many industries, the following is a clear-cut, concise history of the family, compiled over years through scholarly research. Much of the facts herein are drawn from the personal journals of the family members, their correspondence, historical records, and accounts from present-day ancestors. But be warned, curious friend, you may find the truth quite grim. The rich history of the Gracie family goes back many centuries, all the way to the English moors of Dark Peak near Sheffield in the late 1300s, climbing their way from lowly serfs working the land all the way up to the rank of baronet, awarded to Sir Gareth Gracie in 1512. Of course, despite the family's higher rank and status, much of the family's renown and wealth did not come until 1692, when a young Edward Gracie, fresh from his time at Cambridge, came to the province of New York to set down roots on the banks of the Hudson.
The city was nothing to boast about in those days, not much more than a market town. A gentleman whom I was traveling with at the time remarked that he had never seen such a shabby and meager town in all his life. I, on the other hand, saw a bustling hive of enterprise, full of spirit and, more importantly, opportunity. Perhaps it was an unearthly confidence, but more likely just ignorance. A great many things have been accomplished by those who did not know they were impossible. In any case, it was there and then that I decided that New York would be the bedrock for which I would build our fortune. Edward Gracie, 1724.
It is from here that the family began its empire in the whaling and trading industries, sailing ships from the ports of New York throughout New England and later into the Caribbean after an agreement in 1705 with the East India Company. Fortunately, it was not just financial success which young Edward found in the New World. In 1712, he courted a young daughter of a French merchant by the name of Emily de Clare. The two were married in the following spring, soon bearing their first child, whom they named William. In the impending years, they would have six more children: Thomas, Samuel, Prudence, Albert, Ezekiel, and Algernon. Of those six, only Samuel and Prudence would live past the age of three. Despite this, Edward's once small shipping business had grown into a mighty fleet, which became even greater in 1719 when his father-in-law passed, leaving Edward what was left of his business and its assets. It was then that Gracie purchased a large plot of land and began building what would become a grand manor house of brick and mortar, and the very project that would consume his twilight years, and later his mind. Of course, like with most things, success began to come at a cost. In 1728, Emily contracted yellow fever and passed on soon after. This is said to be when Edward began his descent into madness. He began to focus solely on the construction of his mansion, perfecting it and constantly saying he wished so badly to please darling Emily with its completion. As the years passed, his home became more and more bizarre, with stairways leading to nowhere, secret chambers hidden behind bookcases, and seemingly endless hallways. In 1730, William, who was a well-learned boy for his age, began to take the helm of the shipping company and quickly steered it away from the brink of bankruptcy. Over the years, he worked hard to fix what his father had come to neglect, as Edward fell deeper and deeper from sanity, until in 1735, while William was away in Boston on business, Edward Gracie took his own life, and the life of his son Samuel. A letter from Prudence to William recounts that night.
It had been a poor day for Father's constitution, and so to help calm his mind and keep him safe, Samuel and I decided to lock him in his room. It was quiet for some time. Then came the pounding. That horrid pounding on the door. It went on for hours with only few brief moments of respite. At one point, when I was in the corridor, I could see the door heaving, pulsing forward with the weight of his body. It was late that night. I was suffering from one of my spells of restlessness, of which I know you are familiar, and so I found myself in the library, reading. A storm had rolled in from the sea, sending rain pattering across the windows and soft thunder rolling across the valley. Under these wholesome conditions, I began to be lulled into a gentle sleep. I don't know how long my eyes were closed. Perhaps an hour, perhaps just a moment. But I was jolted awake by a horrible crash of what I thought at the time was thunder. Contented with the rest I had had, I went back to reading my book. What a terrible mistake that was. For a few minutes later, Samuel came running down the hall, exclaiming that Father had broken down his door and was missing. We raced through the corridor searching for him when suddenly we heard it. A wicked cackling that echoed through the halls and chilled my bones. It sounded like he was running toward the attic. We ran to the stairway that led up to the cupola, and that's when we saw him, leering over us from the stairwell. A wild, crazed look in his eye unlike anything I had ever seen before. Almost as if it were not our father at all. He quickly turned and began to climb higher, and we gave chase. We found him at the very top walkway, standing before an open window. He said nothing, only snickered and laughed. Samuel attempted to approach and calm him, but he darted to the window and climbed out onto the rooftop. Sam followed. The rain made everything slick, and Father stumbled, allowing Sam to reach him. He tried to grab Father's collar to force him inside, but Father quickly turned and began strangling him. I wailed for them to stop as they pushed and pulled each other moment by moment, nearing closer to the edge. But to no avail. Samuel stumbled and lost his balance. And then fell, crashing down on top of the conservatory. My father, still laughing all this time, looked down at his son's crumpled mass amongst the broken iron and shattered glass, and grew silent. And then he looked back at me. It was only for a moment, but in his eyes I saw him looking back at me. With his own eyes. As if asking for forgiveness. Then he closed his eyes. And threw himself back. Hurtling through the air. Then all was quiet.
Despite the tragedy which befell the family, William had what work was left on the mansion completed and lived there for some time with his sister, until she was wed in 1737 to Thomas Dredd of the Dredds of Great Neck on Long Island. In 1739, William set off on a voyage to examine trading prospects in Europe. Very little is known about the events that occurred while William was overseas, and much of what was said was merely hearsay and rumors. This much is known, though. In December of 1741, he returned to New York with a very new, very pregnant bride by the name of Conchetta. That following February, the couple, to their surprise, was blessed with a pair of twins whom they named Bartholomew and Angus. Upon their birth, they quickly found that Angus was different. To save the family's public image, poor Angus was hidden away in the rooms of the manor until 1751, when at the age of 10 and under cover of darkness, he was taken to the newly founded Pennsylvania Hospital to be treated. Once there, he was deemed distempered in mind, quietly locked away, and, after a time, forgotten.
He no longer speaks, and has begun to respond violently to our care. For the safety of my staff and other patients, I have placed him in a separate room where he may find peace and solitude. I fear your son's condition may be deteriorating beyond when he was brought to our care. Dr. Jedediah Seeker, 1754.
Many years later, a fire would break out at the hospital, nearly consuming an entire wing. While the Gracie Air was said to have perished in the blaze, no body was ever recovered, and there were multiple reports in the days that followed of a strange, bearded madman, short in stature, gallivanting across the countryside, a 10-pound iron ball still shackled to his ankle. Bartholomew, on the other hand, was exactly how a son of the era should be. Constantly at his father's side, he mastered the arts of sailing, fencing, horseback riding, and strategy, all by the age of 17, quickly making him one of the most sought-after young bachelors in the colonies. Much to his father's dismay and the chagrin of several young ladies, Bartholomew decided to leave his home and his family's business to study at the Royal Naval Academy in Portsmouth, England. Just as in his other pursuits, he excelled in all things he took upon himself, and was quickly promoted to the rank of lieutenant under the command of Commodore William Hotham aboard the HMS Preston in 1763. In 1774, after many years at sea and a promotion to commander, the 33-year-old Bartholomew left the King's service to join his mother after his father, William Gracie, passed 2 months prior. Back at his ancestral home along the Hudson, he immediately took the reins of his father's work. Unlike all his other pursuits, however, he found no such luck in the shipping and whaling industries like his father and grandfather before him. Fearing bankruptcy, he headed south to see prospects in the growing port of New Orleans. After several business agreements, including a very lucrative accord with the Spanish government, Bartholomew was indeed able to save his family's legacy and even begin his very own in the blooming Crescent City. At an evening soiree in November of 1774, he met a young lady by the name of Priscilla Shipley. To Bartholomew, Priscilla was quite unlike any woman he had ever met. Several accounts speak of her quick wit in social settings, as well as her vast knowledge of the business side of New Orleans trade.
I have never met another woman of such grace and divine beauty, with such a keen and clever mind as she. Her words set my heart ablaze, her tender glance cools me. All at once she has captured me, body and soul. Of that I am quite certain. Bartholomew Gracie, 1774.
The two fell passionately in love and were wed in April of 1775. By the following January, they had moved into a small, comfortable home on the outskirts of New Orleans and produced an heir, which they named Yale, after her father. And for that moment, everything was perfect. In late July of 1776, Bartholomew was personally requested by the king to return to service and aid in subduing the rebellion which had sprung up in New England. Again, he was on the HMS Preston, and as the small uprising turned into an outright war, Bartholomew began to fear he would never see his beloved Priscilla ever again.
My dearest Priscilla, it feels as though a lifetime has passed since I stood at the dock with you and our son, sharing our farewells. Each day I feel more and more inward leadings, asking myself if this war need be fought any longer. Whether I'm right or not, perhaps posterity will tell. Yesterday I heard reports of loyalists being hanged in parts of the colonies. A man named Gabriel Burroughs was hanged last month in New York. I knew him, Priscilla. He was a dear friend of mine as a boy. It's strange to think of such times of innocence now. Thinking of our love gives me great comfort and solace. Know that my thoughts are never far from you and from our son. In my dreams, I often find myself at long last returning home to see you standing in the door. How I long to be there soon, to stand at the open gate, Yale running to embrace. I yearn for a day when the vast emptiness of the sea is at last behind me, to be faced with the task of domesticity, to raise our son, maybe more, to see them achieve great things, and to grow old with you, my dearest love, my precious friend. That is my most earnest desire. Bartholomew Gracie, July 1778.
As the war raged on and France entered the fray, much of the navy was pulled down into the Caribbean to protect the crown's interests, including the HMS Preston. In December of 1778, the ship was drawn into the Battle of St. Lucia. While the British navy did, in the end, defeat the French that day, Bartholomew was wounded by a canister shot early on in the battle. He bled out within 3 minutes. Upon hearing the news of her lost love, Priscilla went deep into mourning and hid herself away from the world. To make matters worse, nearly a month later, she and young Yale were forced out of their home as the Spanish aligned themselves with the colonies and had begun a southern assault on the British. With nowhere else to go, Priscilla and young Yale made a harrowing journey north and took up residence at Gracie Manor alongside Conchetta. The two widows became very close as they raised young Master Yale. Unfortunately, their camaraderie was not quite enough to free Priscilla from the deep depression she found herself in. And almost exactly 2 years after losing her darling husband, she died after poisoning herself, leaving Conchetta alone to see to the upbringing of little Yale in that quiet, cold house. We hope you'll join us in the next episode, where we'll follow Yale as he journeys into adulthood and takes up a dangerous career path with some interesting new allies. It's a chapter full of adventure, romance, and even magic. Next time on Grimm. Our cast this episode featured the voice talents of Ronnie Gross as Edward Gracie, Shanna Stoker as Prudence Gracie, Nick Barbera as Dr. Seeker, Daniel Pittam as Bartholomew Gracie, with additional voices by Josh Lakaitis and Brennan Betterly. House of the Rising Sun, arranged by David Rector and performed by Lo Strung. Grimm is a non-profit, unofficial haunted mansion fiction written by Mason Betterly and inspired by stories, concepts, and actual historical events. It is not in any way affiliated with the Walt Disney Company, nor does it reflect the company's views.